Please welcome the Executive Director of the Atlanta Regional Commission, Mr. Douglas Hooker.
Good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. Everybody got your green on? No, if you don't, get out the room. No, okay, stay a while. All right. We're getting ready to have a great panel discussion, I believe, by some elected officials who are deeply involved in and affected by the issue of negative equity in their communities or parts of their community. And I'm not going to belabor introductions. I think many of them are probably well known, so I'll just ask them to come on up as I call their name. The Honorable John Eaves, who's the chairman of Fulton County. The Honorable Deborah Jackson, who's the mayor of Lithonia. The Honorable Bucky Johnson, who's the mayor of Norcross. President Mitchell's not with us yet. Oh, there he is. Okay, great. The Honorable Caesar Mitchell, president of the Atlanta City Council, and the Honorable Jeffrey Turner, who is chair of Clayton County. So by way of introduction, I want to say that I've had the pleasure, and I continue to have the pleasure, of working with all five of these officials very often on a lot of local and regional matters. And I can tell you that they're not subject matters on experts on everything. Nobody is, really. But I can tell you they are very much expert on the plight of families and individuals, and they all care deeply about how people are living in distressed neighborhoods and conditions. That much I know from personal conversations and working with them. So with that, I begin, first of all, with my Southern background and Southern upbringing. I'm going to start with the ladies first, or with the lady first, excuse me, Mayor Jackson. I want to pose to them a series of questions on four major themes, and I'm going to start with Mayor Jackson with the first question, and after that, we'll let it flow as it will. And the four major themes are this. How has negative equity affected your jurisdiction? I'm going to ask each of them to reflect on that specifically. And if you have any anecdote you want to share, I think that helps. Anecdotes aren't statistical, but the power of the individual story certainly helps convey the human experience, I think, a lot more deeply. The second thing is the challenge of code enforcement in neighborhoods that have high levels of negative equity. At the same time, you have the drain on government resources by these homes that aren't generating as much tax revenue. There's also more demand, typically, for more services for code enforcement. So what's been that challenge for your jurisdiction, and how do you work through those challenges? And then what are some of the obstacles with returning these communities to their earlier pre-2007 or pre-crisis conditions? How do we get the values in these neighborhoods back up? And what are some of the strategies that you guys have used or seen in your jurisdiction, either by your government or private sector or nonprofit or by partnerships, to try to turn around these neighborhoods and drive up the ownership rates? So I'm going to start again, Mayor Jackson, with the question of how has negative equity impacted your jurisdiction in Lithonia?
Okay, thank you so much, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. Taking a look at the city's tax digest over the past several years, one of the things that I realized was that actually from 2004 to 2008, the city actually experienced an increase in the value of the tax digest. And in fact, 2008 actually represented the highest value that we had seen. And since that time, from 2008 forward, there has been a continual decline. And so that's been impacted by the number of foreclosures that we've seen, as well as the vacancies. And so last year, 2014, we began to see an increase in the digest once again, but it's not anywhere near what it was back in 2008 or 2004 when we started the increase. Additionally, I would say that the whole concept of negative equity in the presentation that was just made by Professor Cohen just shows what the impact has actually been. We've seen an increase in the number of vacancies that have occurred, and that has provided an opportunity for primarily outside investors to come into the community. And so it has decreased the level of home ownership within the community and has led to an increase in the rentership as well as a series of vacant properties that are not being maintained and are falling into a state of disrepair. I would say that in terms of some of the strategies that the city has undertaken to begin to address that, as a small community of 2,000 people, we have a very small staff and limited resources, so it requires us to be much more creative in terms of how do we actually begin to address the issues that are impacting our community, because the citizens expect the same level of services regardless of the size of our community. They expect to see the same things happen in Lithonia that they do within the city of Atlanta, as well as Norcross. So we are participating in a program that is sponsored by the Department of Community Affairs and the University of Georgia, known as the Georgia Initiative for Community Housing, which has provided an opportunity to get technical assistance to help develop a housing strategy. So I don't know if you want me to go
into detail. Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. Chairman Eves.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the invitation to participate in this very, very important forum. I want to just share a county perspective that will, to a certain degree, augment what Mayor Jackson shared from a city perspective. Fulton County is the largest county in the state of Georgia. We have about 1 million residents, and this issue of underwater equity, foreclosures, certainly does have an impact on the local level. And just to give you some degree of a perspective, county government, local government, we rely heavily on residential property taxes. The values of properties is how we, for the most part, function as government for both county, city, school board. We rely heavily on property values. And when there is a downward turn in the economy that leads to challenges in the housing market, it impacts government, and it also impacts our ability to provide services to our constituents because we're funded by these taxes. So Fulton County, as the largest county in the state of Georgia, has about 300,000 parcels, and a significant number of them are underwater. Most of them are in certain parts of the city of Atlanta and in South Fulton. We also have what's called a homestead exemption, which is basically a credit that's applied towards the value of the house, and right now it's $30,000, and there's a significant number of properties in many of our communities that are completely off the tax roll because their assessed values are relatively low. Again, the impact is on our ability to deliver services. So Fulton County, which is dependent on property values, for many years had not increased its millage rate. But last year, for the first time in 23 years, we had to increase our millage rate very modestly because there was a $51 million shortfall in our budget. And so we had to recalibrate to increase the amount that we tax because we wanted to provide this, a certain level of services that our constituents are accustomed to receiving. So what does it, how does it also impact communities? And what the professor shared earlier, there certainly are many communities in Fulton County, specifically in the city of Atlanta, that are tremendously impacted by this underwater situation. Most notably, in my opinion, is a 30318 area code, which is basically Vine City, English Avenue, to the west of where the Georgia Dome is, North Side Drive. You have one of the highest rates of foreclosures in that area. And so what does that mean? It certainly means a destabilized community. You drive through that area, it looks like a war zone in terms of vacant properties. And it is also a breeder of crime. We have discovered through our own data collection that the highest rates of ex-offenders come from that area code or that zip code. And so it is important for county government to collaborate with resources or federal government agencies and resources that are available, county to collaborate with city to do what we can to stabilize these communities, because in many cases where you have the highest rates of foreclosures, the highest rates of vacant properties, that's where you have the highest rates of crime. And so this is certainly an issue that's just not an academic exercise, but is a person, a real exercise, because it does have an impact on our local communities within counties.
Mayor Johnson, is that a similar experience for you guys in Norcross, the highest rate of blighted neighborhoods due to negative equity? Does that correlate with high rates of crime as well in Norcross?
What we see is along that same lines. Let me give you the caveat. In Gwinnett County, we're a majority-minority county. And matter of fact, we're one of the most diverse counties in the whole nation. In Norcross, we have a huge Latino community. And what we have found is what's happened many years ago when Technology Park was built. There's a number of extended stays that were built around there because a lot of people were traveling in and working at Tech Park. Well, those extended stays have kind of aged out. And what's happened now, a lot of people that have moved out of houses for whatever reason, whether they lost their house, foreclosure, couldn't afford it, are now staying in extended stays for extended periods of time. Instead of, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, they're there for months and even years. And it overloads the system, and that's where we have crime, because they were really not built for people to live there permanently or for months on end and have families there. And so that's really the biggest effect to our area. And then the one other is about code enforcement. It's very difficult when a property goes into foreclosure to find out who owns the property and who we send the bill to if we have to do cleanup, or who's responsible for cleaning up that property. And that's, those two areas are probably the biggest thing in our area.
Okay. President Mitchell, what's been Atlanta's experience, and what are some of the challenges you guys have had with code enforcement during this crisis period?
Well, I think code enforcement is one of the most pernicious issues that we deal with in the city of Atlanta. And as it relates to negative equity, the relationship is a direct line relationship. And negative equity, I believe, is such an important conversation to have. And so, again, I think this is a wonderful forum for us to have this dialogue. But when you think about negative equity, you really are thinking about or talking about a negative poisonous soup that really leads to a certain predictable list of what I would call negative side effects. Negative equity essentially means that you do not have the ability to use your real estate property to pull wealth out of it and to use it for whatever it might be, whether it's family needs or if you're a small business owner, you can't use the equity that you may have in your home to advance and grow your business. What we've also seen with respect to negative equity is an increase in foreclosures. Foreclosures directly lead to reduction in home ownership. Reduction in home ownership leads directly to, as Mayor Jackson indicated, the involvement of people who don't have an interest in your community from a heart and soul perspective, just a financial perspective, to speculate on the real estate. So they're not there every day. And so that leads to blight, and blight leads to the code enforcement issues that we face. And so it's really this negative soup that really builds on itself. And when you have a decrease in home ownership and an increase in blight, people leave the community. You have a community that's more transient than ever before. And when a community is more transient, then that impacts your schools. And when your schools are continuously impacted because you don't have a steady family base of student population in a neighborhood schools, the schools suffer. And then you get back to stage one again, because then the market makes assumptions about your neighborhood and your ability to actually increase the value of your home. Your home is actually diminished, and there you go again with more negative equity. So it creates this incredibly negative cycle of despair that I believe is a challenge for our city. Now, in the city of Atlanta, what we've done in the last few years, we have invested more in code enforcement. Literally last year in our budget, we increased the amount of money we provide for code enforcement, and demolition by nearly $2 million, and we did that on the spot when we realized that we had the opportunity and we were getting back to health as a city to do that. We also have council members working with the administration and working with the external community to develop a process and really advance the process for NREM foreclosures, which allow the city to actually get property, demolish it, and have a priority lien in a much more efficient fashion. That's been a collaboration of governments, a collaboration of the private sector and the nonprofit sector. We believe that will have a very positive impact. But at the end of the day, it's going to boil down to partnership and how we continue to advance partnerships and encourage capital to invest in communities, because that's where it all starts.
Chairman Turner, I want to first of all applaud you for running to become chairman at a time when we were in the height or the depth, if you prefer, of this whole housing crisis. And so it took an act of courage to even want to lead at a time like that. And Clayton County has been one of the hardest hit communities by this whole phenomenon. What are some of the discussions and things that you and your county commission colleagues have talked about, and how have you tried to approach addressing this issue in your communities?
Thank you, Doug. First of all, it's definitely a pleasure to be here. As you can tell, Clayton County is particularly hit hard with this issue. Four of my seven counties, those zip codes, are within this listing. That's problematic. It was a challenge when I came in. We had to have some deep discussion, try to get to the root of the problem. There are a number of reasons why Clayton County was so hard hit. You know, of course, the economy bottomed out. Then we had a particular bad situation with the school system where we lost our accreditation. And when we lost our accreditation, we lost 5,000 students within the school system. Now, parents don't want their kids going to a school if they believe that they're not going to get a quality education. So those 5,000 students or families sought other school systems, which meant they had to move out of Clayton County into another school system. Of course, because they were underwater, if they couldn't sell their home or couldn't afford to do so, they'd simply walked away. And that caused a traumatic spike in the number of foreclosures in Clayton County. 61% of the homes in Clayton County have negative equity. 61%. Now, you look at the issue with negative equity, and you look at the blight, and you can see a direct correlation as well. Now, I have a unique perspective because before I became the chairman of Clayton County, I was the chief of police and was with the police department for over 23 years. One of the initiatives that I undertook was the sin code enforcement into those blighted areas, as well as with law enforcement, because it was definitely a correlation between crime and blighted areas. So it wasn't just always safe just to send code enforcement in, but you had to have some enforcement behind that. And when you have a 61% negative equity community, you also have a high rental community. Approximately 65% of the homes in Clayton County are rental homes. Another problem. Because not all, but some, don't have that same investment, that same commitment to being homeowners, to caring about their property. So then that enforcement part comes into play again. You have to make sure that you hold people accountable. But of course, we are a fairly large county. We are the third smallest county in the state, but the fifth most populated. We're not as large as Fulton County, of course, and I'm sure Chairman Ease would amen that. But at the same time, we have those big county issues and problems. A lot of the conversation that's centered around here today is, I mean, you can overlay them and you can see we have the same problems. But particularly for Clayton County, because we have such a high negative equity percentage. That means we're going to have to dig in and collaborate and partner more with those entities, because it's a community problem. It's a county problem. Our city counterparts in the county, the community at large, need to work together to address this issue. The value of homes are going up slightly. There's a slight increase. So I think we're moving in the right direction. But there's so much more we can do. And we can only do that if we work together. So I'm looking forward to 2015 and working with a lot of good people to change not only the perception of what people think Clayton County is, but also to do something actively and constructively about changing the market. Thank you.
Thank you. All of you talked about the intertwining of code enforcement and law enforcement and the challenges there, but not to stay on the downer side, flipping over to the optimistic side, because I know all of you to be optimistic individuals. How do you see that your jurisdictions, your communities will be able to work through this? Is it just a matter of time and letting the market come back, or are there some proactive things you can do in partnership with private sector and nonprofits to try to target improving home ownership in some of these communities? Or maybe you're doing some of those things right now and you have something to share with us.
So I'm cautiously optimistic. As many of my colleagues have already shared, there is evidence of the uptick in the market. I will say from a county perspective, Fulton County specifically, the uptick is in the more affluent areas. It's slow in some of the more challenged communities within our county. I think that it's very clear that government can't do it by itself. Over the past month, I have reached out to two major banks in Fulton County to partner. President Mitchell mentioned partnership, to partner with their existing homeowners down payment assistance program so that we can be even more effective, be more expansive in terms of getting folks to get into homes. We also dealing with, in a back way, sort of the end result of what happens when people leave their homes or lose their homes, and that's homelessness. And so there are about 10,000 homeless folks in Fulton County. And so, again, we are dealing with the banking community to perhaps come up with a funding mechanism to support a capital project that will allow us to better serve our homeless communities. So I think that collaboration, partnership, working with the private sector, specifically working with the banking industry, is a step in the right direction. But I also think, lastly, we need to focus in on certain areas. And again, I think the graphic that was shown earlier about the disparities or inequities in Chicago is very much present here in Fulton County, where we need to be focused and targeting certain communities. The last thing I want to mention is what Cesar Mitchell mentioned, the school system. To me, that's got to be a part of the equation in terms of stabilizing our community, because in many of these challenged communities, the high school dropout rate is too high, and folks' confidence in the school system in those areas is very low.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I would say that in terms of the city of Lithonia, we have also worked to establish partnerships and collaborations. The city is working with DeKalb County to be part of the DeKalb Regional Land Bank Authority, which was established a few years ago. And land banks have developed very great projects in areas such as Macon and Augusta in terms of their ability to help clear up title and redevelop properties. And so we think that that's a great opportunity in DeKalb County, not only for the city of Lithonia, but the other cities that exist as well. As it relates to the issue of home ownership, I mean, it's amazing that the numbers are so similar. We have about a 65% renter population within the city. And so to address that, we have partnered with the University of Georgia to actually do a service learning project where we're undertaking a series of focus groups just to get a better understanding about the residents' understanding or interest in home ownership, finding out why they're not pursuing it and what might some of the barriers be to that, with the goal of identifying available resources. And we're looking to schedule a housing fair later in the year to just provide that information to people. Because through the process of the focus groups, a lot of people just don't have information that there are down payment assistance programs that are available, that there's housing counseling services available to help people, once they actually get into a home, understand how to stay there, because that has been a challenge as well. And I would just keep going back to the whole foreclosure issue. One of the things that we have found within the community is that, you know, that there was really a feeling of, one, fear, and also a sense of shame, that somehow many people felt that they had personally failed. And so a lot of times that they didn't go after or seek support that was actually available that could have helped them stay in their home. And so one of the things that we want to do to go forward is just create an environment that people are willing to share information so that they can get the assistance that is available to them. But I think each of my colleagues have indicated that, you know, that collaborations and partnerships are really going to be essential to begin to turn this issue around. And without doubt, we know that education and schools are really an economic driver for all communities of people. So even though as cities and county governments, we don't have direct control over the schools, but we definitely have to be in partnership with the school system to help turn those schools around so that they become a magnet for our communities.
Well, I would echo that. The Gwinnett County School System just won the Broad Prize, which is the top urban school system in the country. And we're seeing more in countywide, not just the city of Norcross, countywide in terms of new housing starts, and so that really is, there is a correlation between the school system, and you see the other side of it in Clayton County. But two things that have been helpful in Norcross: we have the Impact Group, which is a 501c3, which really helps people in all areas get temporary housing, get out from underwater, refinance, those type of things. So they've been very helpful. And then there's a financial center that's been set up by the Gwinnett Village CID, it's a community improvement district, and the United Way in tandem in kind of the center of our community, both the county and the city, and they've been very helpful to people. So I think those partnerships are important.
Great.
You know, I'll add to that as well. I can only just quadruply emphasize how important partnerships are. And I'm a big supporter and believer in partnerships. And I'll just use the soup analogy again as to why partnerships are so important. If you think about the soup, the negative, poisonous soup that has so many different ingredients that flows from negative equity and so many other vices in our society, you know, that soup has ingredients such as lack of access to capital, lack of job attainment, lack of educational attainment, blight in the community, foreclosures, reduction in home ownership, code enforcement issues flowing from that blight. All that's in a soup. And if you think about it, once something is in a soup, you can't reach in and pluck it out like you can pluck a piece of tomato out of a salad. And so what that means essentially is that you've got to find an integrated strategy to address what really now is a very negative and detrimental soup. And so that's where partnerships come into play. And so, for example, in the city of Atlanta, we understand the connection between public safety and code enforcement. And so we essentially have integrated and included our code enforcement division or section into our police department. So they are working together. And even beyond the city of Atlanta as an entity, we're partnering with Fulton County. Chairman Eaves has a smart justice council. He's invited a number of folks from other jurisdictions, including the city of Atlanta, departments within the city, to discuss the issue of public safety and justice in our court system. We are working right now with the District Attorney of Fulton County to create an integrated approach to addressing these various ingredients in the soup, because the police department can't, if it's not working closely with code enforcement or with the sanitation department, they can't reach into that soup and pull the trash out of our communities. That's not their competency. You know, the public safety, I mean, the public works department can't reach in that soup and actually arrest someone who's committing a crime. You can't have code enforcement reach in and actually save a child through educational tactics. That's the job of the school system. So we have a program that we're working on now with Fulton County through the district attorneys, a partnership between our courts, our police department, code enforcement, the district attorney's office, and other functions within city and county government to literally go and identify a community and work together to solve a series of problems, a series or set of problems in that particular community. We could not do that if we were not partnering together.
Okay.
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't go back and say that the Clayton County Public School System has regained its full accreditation. So make sure you write that one.
Good point. Good point.
So feel free to move back.
So. You get an A. Okay.
But seriously, we have seen a increase in student enrollment in the school system. But one of the things that the Clayton County government and nonprofits have done, we have actually partnered up to put on seminars and forums to educate the homeowners and renters alike to make sure that they understand the full value of keeping their property up, property values, how to be a responsible homeowner, but at the same time to prepare those renters, those 65% renters, to prepare them for home ownership. They don't know about a lot of the resources that they have out there that's available to them to become homeowners. And of course you have those few that does not care at either way it goes. But I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we educate those who want to be educated. So not only can they move productively into home ownership, but spread the word. You know, you're not going to touch the whole community, but those that you can touch, hopefully they will go out there and spread the word that this is available to others. And I think that's got to be one of the biggest pieces to helping resolve this issue of foreclosure, and that is educating citizens. They need to know what they're getting into before they move into a home or strive to be homeowners. You know, you see a lot of folks that move from an apartment setting where everything pretty much is taken care of them. They don't have to cut the grass. They don't have to worry about trash pickup, you know. And then they move into a home. And then all of a sudden, what they thought their budget was going to be isn't what it is. Because, of course, you know, you have to take care of the trash. You got to pay for Georgia Power because they want their money and other utilities. So when they see they can't pay it, then they fall behind and ultimately some walk out on the mortgage. And, again, the biggest piece to that is education for me.
Thank you all. Let's open it now to take questions from you, the folks who are attending the conference. If you will come to one of the mics and give your name and organization affiliation as you address your question to the panel.
Good morning. My name is Jeffrey Hicks, and I'm the chairman of the Empire Board of Realtors, one of the Piece by Piece Initiative partners. The Empire Board of Realtors is the oldest and largest minority trade association, real estate trade association in Metro Atlanta. And I see a number of other real estate professionals here. And so if there's anybody here that is a real estate agent like myself, would you sustain quickly so they can see how many real estate agents are in this room? And the reason why I asked them to do that is that we make a living selling homes. And it's very stressful because I personally sell houses in communities that have negative equity. My office is located on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in 30310. The average sales price, and I've been practicing real estate full-time for 20 years, and the average sales price, my average sales price for the past 20 years have been between $48,000 and $64,000. So if you take 3% of that, that's a tough way to earn a living.
All right, Mr. Hicks, thank you for your service. Do you have a question for the panel?
I have a question.
Okay, all right. And I'm just trying to be rude, but I want to give other people the opportunity to get up and ask questions, okay?
As a real estate professional, as we're talking about negative equity, what I'm asking myself is, in a city like Atlanta, there are communities that have positive equity. So what's the difference between the communities with negative equity that have the same, have a great access to downtown, they have public transportation, they have a plethora of city parks, they have, from a transportation and a location standpoint, why are we talking about negative equity when across the road, communities with the same physical infrastructure have tremendous positive equity? And if I look at this from a macro level, the difference seems to be that there is no entity that is advocating.
I need you to get to a question so we can let somebody else have a question.
Let me get
okay?
it out.
All right. I need you to get to a question so we can let somebody else have a question to the panel.
There is no entity that is advocating for employment centers in communities where there's negative equity. If we look at all of these communities that are suffering with all these crime problems, there's no employment center. There's no class A office space in these communities. There are no hospitals in these communities. There's no large employers. And when we look at the communities in Atlanta, I'm talking about in the city of Atlanta, that's doing extremely well, like Midtown. And you look at the schools associated with Midtown. When you look at Dunwoody, and when you look at Vinings, you see employment. When you look at Lenox area and the Buckhead corridor, there's employment. And so my question is, what entity within the city of Atlanta is advocating to bring employment jobs into communities that once were employment centers 30 or 40 years ago? How can we help make that happen?
Well, you know, let me just say this really quickly. And Jeffrey, you and I have known each other for a long time. I can hit a four-iron shot from your office to my home in West End. We literally live a block from one another. And, of course, as a real estate attorney for many, many years, I understand very clearly the work that real estate agents do and the commitment and sacrifice you've made literally over the last 8 years staying in the business, because you really are the front line for any community when it comes to talking up a community and why it's important for a young family or empty nesters to choose a particular community. So we do owe you a debt of gratitude and have to give you the tools you need to be able to sell a particular community. And so I'll just say this, and I think it boils down to, quite frankly, policy as well as entities, but the most important thing is the willingness of the capital markets to invest. And that is the distinction. There's no way around it. But capital markets invest based upon certain realities that they observe and assumptions that they pull from those realities. And then those assumptions they pull from those realities tend to compound these realities and lead to even additional compounded assumptions. And so one of the things that we have always been focused on in the city of Atlanta, and we really have to get back to it, and I think this forum is a good opportunity for us to start thinking about it, is what is our affordable housing policy and how are we integrating that with job policy? Job policy is something that's public side. However, it requires private sector engagement and partnership. And we've done a pretty decent job with Invest Atlanta in integrating the two. We've got to double down on that. We've got to get back to a very firm and strong affordable housing policy, because a family that's able to have housing is going to be more stable. And when you're more stable, you can keep a job. And when you get a job, you can dream. You can dream. You can become an entrepreneur. When you become an entrepreneur, you become an employer. And so, you know, we've got to continue to utilize Invest Atlanta as that entity that helps us to bring business to Atlanta, whether it's NCR, whether it's Porsche, whether it's WorldPay. Continue to bring those kinds of businesses that create jobs and ensure that those jobs that are created also are created in tandem with affordable housing opportunities so that people can live in the community where they work.
Mr. Hicks asked a question about the City of Atlanta, but I was going to say, does anybody else want to respond to that?
I think your concern is valid. Your question is right on point. There certainly is an inequity or disparity of development across the county. As Cesar Mitchell pointed out, I think a way to deal with it, rectify it, is through policy. We have, the county and the city, have worked together in terms of tax allocation districts. President Mitchell was very influential in terms of authoring some of the legislation in which Fulton County joined in, where there are about six or seven TADs, as we call it, Westside TAD, Stadium TAD, Camelton Road TAD, TADs in East Point, Union City. This all designed to provide a tax incentive for development to go to underserved communities. The results have been mixed, partly because of the economic downturn that occurred in 2008, 2009. But we certainly, through policy, did this to try to attract development as well as having affordable housing component that was a part of that. We've also, as a county, on Fulton Industrial Boulevard, taken advantage of state incentives, opportunity zones, which were designed to give tax credits for people who companies that create jobs. Again, the results have been mixed, but by policy, we certainly have made an effort. I will say lastly, I want to hit the school system theme again. I think that's crucial in terms of economic development, community development. We've got to figure out a way to strengthen the school system. As an example of this, Mercedes-Benz, which recently announced that they were coming to Fulton County, specifically they decided to relocate to Sandy Springs, because among the folks who courted them was the Fulton County School System Superintendent, who very eloquently talked about the great gains that are being made in the Fulton County School System, especially in North Fulton. And that was the carrot that got Mercedes to come. And I think we have to figure out, it's very complicated, but how can we get the school systems in the other parts of Fulton County and in Atlanta to be upgraded, be more economically or educationally vibrant, so that they can be part of the solution for community and economic development.
And just to touch right quick about your question on educational centers, just last week at the Atlanta Regional Commission, we discussed educational centers from a regional perspective. So that conversation is being had at the regional level.
Another question? Oh, I'm sorry. Mayor Jackson.
Yeah, the same phenomenon that you raised has also been reflected in DeKalb County as well, where we really have many of the employment centers from a policy perspective were placed in the northern part of the county, and they sort of developed the southern part of the county as a residential bedroom community. And now we have a situation where the northern part of the county has actually created new cities. And so that has had an impact on the county's tax base. But I think it still presents an opportunity of how do we really focus at this point on redeveloping the southern part of the county that has great potential. It has a lot of land that's available. And I think historically part of the reason why the southern area has suffered economically is because everybody or many people are leaving that area during the day to work in the northern part of the county or some other county. And so the point of how do we actually begin to create employment centers so people don't have to drive so far and they can actually live, work, and play within the community that they live, I think is a challenge that is before us at this time.
Okay. Any other questions? Sir?
Hi, I'm Leslie Choi with Calibrims. I think the best medicine to grow the economy is to have the job creation. I want to share a very good experience about Macau, the city next to Hong Kong. As we all know, when Macau start having these casino things, their property grow 20 to 30 times, or 2,000 to 3,000% in the last 10 years. So, but one thing that in Georgia, that our city, our state, really block this job creation opportunity is to say, hey, gambling is illegal. I know people in Hong Kong and Macau, those citizens, the residents there, they don't gamble, actually. They just wait for visitors to gamble. And basically,
Question. I'm going to keep hitting you guys. Question for the audience.
How likely that Georgia is going to unblock the casino thing and let gambling legal, like having a racetrack, horse racetrack? I mean, where you know Kentucky Derby, Triple Crown, Breeders' Cup, you know?
It's probably an important question. I don't consider it relevant to the current discussion. So I'm going to take moderator's prerogative and ask that they talk after this session at the next break about that, so we can keep focusing on the issue of negative equity and home ownership and the lack of home ownership in certain communities.
Thank you
for the question.
They buy property.
Actually, when you were asking the question, sir, I was trying to remember the connection between the resurgence of a community and gambling. And is it Tunica, Mississippi?
Tunica, yeah.
You know, if you go to Tunica, which was just completely devastated from a job perspective, you know, 30 years ago, you have now the per capita income that has increased tremendously because of gambling. The availability of gambling in that community through the casinos, and it's changed the entire community. Now, whatever your opinion is about gambling, the reality of the matter is that jobs create an opportunity for a community to thrive and to eliminate some of these negative impacts that we've discussed. So, I mean, you have a valid point. Again, I agree with the moderator that the question, the political question or the policy question of gambling may not be for this panel, but for others. But there is a connectivity. There is a connectivity, and it's been proven.
Okay, gentlemen here. I know, by the way, Las Vegas has a lot of gambling, but they had the second worst hit community in the nation by the home crisis, so that's not a guarantee of anything. And that's not a personal statement on gambling, just offering the data. Thank you. Sir, your name and affiliation, please.
Jeff Mitchell. To kind of go with when Jeffrey was talking, it kind of reminded me of like the first phase of the housing crisis. People just kept, you should try to fix up the house and you try to stay in the neighborhood and you would just get broken into constantly. So I think one thing, and I'm not sure if there's a question or you might want to question yourself and see what you can do when you go back home to your communities is, and everybody in this room, is I think neighbors got to care. I can give you an example, and that's probably the difference between some of these other neighborhoods and you know, different neighborhoods of what happened was that if someone that they don't know, that's not their neighbors in that house across the street, they called the cops on them. Or they went out there and if they didn't feel comfortable going talking to them, they called the cops on them. So people have to care and they have to watch out for their street, their neighborhood. I'll give you an example of there's a Tina Arnold in Lakewood, which is a neighborhood we're trying to work with. The other day, you know, somebody comes in, they get the lockbox somehow. They got the code from the realtor, got the lockbox, got in there, started taking stuff out. She walks across there and says, "Hey, who are you? What are you doing there? Oh, we're going to buy this house. Well, she sat there. She questioned them. She took their picture. She took their license plate number and then let the police know about it. And the cops were laughing. They're like, "This." They're sitting there smiling for a picture. But it's people like that. You got to, somehow you need to get that to the people in the neighborhoods to watch for each other, to care about each other, because otherwise you're going to put more money into a house, it's going to get broken into again, and the problem is that it's going to, your police department is probably going to get overloaded, but I mean, that's going to be part of the solution, I think.
Let me respond to that. One of the problems we had at Norcross is the Latino community sometimes is a little skeptical about calling the police, exactly what you're talking about there. And they're known to also keep cash on hand rather than keep it in the bank. And so one thing that our police chief did, we're a welcoming community, just like the city of Atlanta, try to be fair and equitable to all who come. But the police chief went a step farther. He put a Latino police academy together, had 32 or 35 in the first one, and did another one 6 months later, had another 30. Now those people have made some bonds with the police department. They feel much more comfortable going to the police department and reporting crimes. And what the problem was is the crimes were never reported when they happened. And so building those community relations like that, I think, help in terms of what both code enforcement and policing in the community.
I guess that goes to the theme of partnerships. This lady here, and then we'll let you have the last.
Good morning. My name is Naima Gilliard, and I am the president of the Lakes of Cedar Grove Homeowners Association. I'm making comments before I ask my question.
Okay. At least we've been warned. Thank you.
I just want to let you know. And I'm not going to be long. We're at 774 people now, with approximately another 100 people coming on, and we're selling and so forth. But what I want to bring to your attention is the new game. This is a new game. The hedge fund companies are coming in new subdivisions, building homes, buying homes, renting homes. So in other words, they're at it again in another way. Across the street from our community, there is a community that is being completed with, and it started out with rent to own, and now it's no down payment. And so it's the same situation again. Down the street from there, the developer is building, and as soon as they come out the ground, they're leasing. So they are turning our home ownership communities to renting communities. We have a cap. They get around the cap, and that's only two homes can be leased by the same entity. So they have different subsidiaries that come in with different names and different locations. So I'm bringing this to your attention, to all of you in your neighborhoods, so that you can be aware of it and to come up with creative ways to try and deal with it. So my question is, well, not so much of a question as much as I'll take it back.
That's okay. Nobody else is asking a question. Yeah. Why should you start?
As much as to be aware, think about it, because it's something that I think is impacting a lot of communities.
Thank you for bringing that attention. Thank you very much. You have the last question or statement, whatever.
Okay, thank you. I was struck by the observation of someone on the panel that the job situation is so important to the housing piece, and we have talked a bit about the jobs piece. My question is whether any of the elected officials or even our Atlanta Regional Commission knows about situations, examples where worker-owned businesses have been considered and supported, because I think this is a source of hope for our communities. I don't think that in this region we have to stoop so low as to depend on casinos, multinational corporations owned by foreign companies, in order to employ people, when we have in this country examples such as in Cleveland, where worker-owned businesses have provided hope and a solution and have shown that they stay in their communities. The workers have a stake in this. Many times they are part owners. We have many forms of worker ownership in this country, ESOPs, employee stock ownership options, or cooperatives. And with Invest Atlanta, can we see a way for there to be some money put into that and our small business sector as our jobs creation strategy instead of always looking to the outside where, in fact, we have shown they don't always stay and they don't always deliver what they have promised when we give them these big tax incentive packages?
Well, I'll just say, since you mentioned Invest Atlanta, just very quickly, I am supportive of worker-owned businesses and would love to hear any specific policy recommendations you have whereby the city can be supportive of that through Invest Atlanta or otherwise. I think about worker-owned businesses, and that issue has been, or the opportunity at least, the idea has been brought to me a number of times on the part of organizations that are really supporting and trying to encourage worker-owned businesses in the city of Atlanta. We passed an ordinance called an urban agricultural ordinance, and I've heard more people discuss the opportunity for worker-owned businesses in this particular field of utilizing property in the city pursuant to our ordinance to create food for our community and for business, for economic development purposes, than in any other industry. So I think with respect to our urban agriculture ordinance, I believe that may be a great opportunity to really encourage worker-owned businesses in our city.
Chairman, yeah,
and,
you want to
and
say
I would add to that. I think that it really is important to look at putting the same kind of effort into supporting and developing, you know, the micro businesses, the worker-owned businesses within our community that is put into attracting a large company to come. You know, my view is that it's good if they do come, but I think the reality is that there would be much more meaningful and have a greater impact within so many communities if we were able to encourage and support people of creating their own businesses and providing the services and products that are needed within that community. And I think it can be done. It just takes a concerted effort and the political will to make that happen.
Doug, if you don't mind, I want to go back to Ms. Gilyard's question or comment. I thought it was really a thoughtful comment that she offered in terms of private individuals or corporations coming in and purchasing property for the intent of leasing. Not only the examples that you shared in South Fulton, but also recently, I believe someone from a foreign investor purchased a lot of property near the Georgia Dome. And frankly, I'm a little bit mixed and conflicted about this issue because on the one hand, there is a reality that there are folks in our community who don't have but one recourse, and that's to lease or to rent. And I think that there is some evidence that the millennials or Generation X folks are more inclined to lease than to buy. So I think there really is a market out there for people who want to lease. But there's also evidence where you have a high rent of renters in a community. It's a destabilized situation. So I think it's really a good comment that she offered in terms of perhaps we as policymakers may need to try to figure out what is the proper balance so that we can ensure that the market who wants to lease is satisfied, but is there such a formula where it's too many who are lessees? And so, again, I want to commend you for the question that was in the comment that was offered, and I think it is really something that we as policymakers need to ponder in terms of having strong communities.
Mayor Johnson, Chairman Turner, you guys want to offer any last thoughts?
Well, real quickly, both the Gwinnett Chamber and the Southwest Chamber are encouraging entrepreneurs. It's not exactly what you were talking about, but we're talking about smaller businesses, and you've got the opportunity zones and less developed census tracts. You've got some TADs. You've got some things in place that encourage that. But, you know, it takes both parts to do that, and I think calling that to the attention of elected officials is really helpful.
And I agree, but if I could take this a moment to go back to the gentleman's question about the crime and community, one of the things I did when I was chief was to bring in community-oriented policing, and what that did was built a relationship between the community and law enforcement, those neighborhoods. We established homeowners associations. We went out and sought out to make sure that the community, the neighborhoods, knew who the officers were that were protecting them, not only when they responded to the calls, but just on a friendly basis, first name basis. They're, when you know an officer, you'll speak to that officer. You'll tell them more than you would on, than a first chance meeting. So that helped in a number of our communities to reduce the crime. And once they took that reduction in crime and they looked at their neighbors and said, hey, you're going to be my brother's keeper. You're going to look out for me. I'm going to look out for you. And they start upkeeping their property. Not only did we see a decrease in crime, but at the same time, the sense of pride within that community grew, and the home ownership in those communities grew as well. So I appreciate that question, and there is definitely a correlation between law enforcement officers being in a community, not just policing it, but being in the community, and that community growth. So I appreciate that.
And to that point, I might mention that the Home Depot Foundation that has been very much active in this area has a program to try to help place police officers and veterans into home ownership, into neighborhoods that have been affected a lot by negative equity. So we want to appreciate that effort as well. Can we thank all of our elected officials here? Thank you very much.